Daniel, please.
Thank you, Hans. Good morning, everyone. Turning our attention to liabilities and equity, my favorite subject.
The only subject, right?
Agenda paper five and 5A. Only one paper for today's meeting. We do have the cover paper as always, which just sets out what we've discussed before, what we're discussing today, and what we're going to discuss in the future. Today, following on from previous board meetings, what we'd like to do is take a much closer look at the existing requirements for classification in IAS 32, have a closer look at those details, identify to what extent those requirements capture the features necessary to make the assessments that we identified last time we spoke. And so, in other words, what we're looking at is to see which features are being applied, which are being applied consistently, what are the inconsistencies, what are the tensions between those requirements, what are the exceptions, are there any gaps, are there features that we are not capturing and we would like to capture in some way. As a reminder, we're going through this process because to address some of those problems that we've identified, those problems with NCI puts, the diversity in practice, those practical issues, we said that we first need to identify what the underlying rationale of the distinction between liabilities and equity should be, and then we can reinforce that and proceed further. So that's what we do in the first section of the paper. In the final section, we outline three possible approaches that we intend to develop further as the project progresses. And I'll just go through those two main sections briefly, one after the other. But is there any questions before I proceed? Or
one general question about the next steps in paper five. In writing the paper, I put a question mark. Paragraph 10, little c, where you suggest we are going to need to discuss the interaction of contractual rights and obligations with regulatory and legal overlays. I wasn't sure what the extent of that discussion. Is it something about substance over form?
At the moment, some of the perceived issues with 32 is this focus on contractual, on there being a contract, and the question arises about scope, whether some contracts that perhaps interact with regulatory requirements, whether they would fall under this standard or perhaps some other standard. So it's just clarifying that. It is a substance question.
The way I see it is maybe the opposite. There is a regulatory or legal system, and in most cases you have to comply with it, and the contract can be, the overlay is a contract within the framework of a legal system and not the law in the context of the contract. So I think I would rather put it in that order. The basic requirement is a legal or regulatory requirement, and then the contract might interpret and put some additional constraints on the parties, but I would not say that the legal thing is an overlay to the contract.
I don't think that's what I meant. I think, for instance, in the case of mandatory tender offers, there is some connection with the contracts, but the question arises under which standard that might fall under, and they have a lot of similarities with put options on non-controlling interests, etc. Put options on own shares.
What sort of standards could be in play?
I think the question is, it's examples like I've got ordinary shares, but then there's a piece of legislation which says you have to pay a minimum dividend on those. Do you look at the instrument and consider the fact that you've got a legal obligation to pay a dividend, but it's outside the contract, or do you restrict your analysis to the contract? It's those types of questions that come up. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
What are the boundaries of the analysis? It's not just how would the contract operate in the environment in which it exists. It's do I have to take into account terms that get imposed by legislation that might change the contractual obligations?
That's how I would have shared.
So,
in such a legislation.
Yeah, but I don't think we want that discussion today.
Yeah, I don't want to get into this
discussion today.
I mean, we are going to look at exactly what the issues are at some point in the future. So let's, if we could please turn to the so we'll go into agenda paper 5A. The analysis of the existing requirements of IS 32 is presented from page 6. For convenience, we have broken down the analysis based on the two basic starting points of the definition of a financial liability in IS 32. Those are, one, obligations to deliver cash or other financial assets, and the second one, obligations to deliver a variable number of equity instruments. I'm not going to go through the analysis in detail. We present a summary of that analysis in paragraphs 50 to 61. That summary is arranged based on the identified assessments that we talked about at the last meeting. Just a couple of things to point out before I turn it over. As we show in that summary, there is not a single feature that is applied consistently through IS 32. We have tried to illustrate the tensions that arise when there are different features that, in one sense, trump one or the other. That might, because they, for instance, they might be relevant for one assessment but not the other. And so, for example, consistently with existing requirements of the conceptual framework, IS 32 does distinguish between claims that require the transfer of resources prior to liquidations, prior to liquidation, and those that don't. However, in some circumstances, some other features trump that requirement. There's an exception, and some which would have that feature would still be classified as equity. Similarly, for those ones that would otherwise be classified as equity because there's no requirement to transfer resources, we do have a requirement to classify them as a liability if it's for a specified amount and they're settled using the entity's own equity instruments. So we've tried to draw out those tensions just to give you an idea of what the underlying themes are. So at this point, I'll just quickly turn it over and ask for any comments or questions you might have on the analysis before I go on to the proposed approaches.
Very good analysis.
Did you agree, Martin? Okay, should I turn over to the proposed approaches then?
Sorry, just slow off the mark here. Can I just check one thing about cumulative preference shares?
Yes.
What we're talking about. When you say cumulative preference shares, you're referring to an instrument that does not require, paragraph 43 is where it's discussed, and you characterize that as does not require the entity to transfer economic resources prior to liquidation. So when you're thinking about cumulative preference, it's you don't have to make a payment in a period. But if you don't make a payment at whatever the stated rate is, before you can make other distributions, you have to catch up the accumulated entitlement. Mm-hmm. But there is no absolute requirement to make payments?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's no payment, but if you don't make a payment, that just, or you defer the payment for as long as you want, mm-hmm. when you do make a payment, that's going to increase over time.
Sorry, but didn't Mary say you can't make other payments?
Yeah.
You could just keep accumulating on this instrument, but ultimately if you went into liquidation, you'd have to pay it out.
That's right.
It wouldn't necessarily restrict other payments in the interim, yeah?
I think what Sue's talking about is a layer of complexity on a simple cumulative where you have a linked where you can't make payments until you have done other things, right? You can't pay dividends or other things.
I was thinking you can't make payments on common until you make payments.
I don't think you're assuming that, are you?
We are just assuming a normal cumulative out here.
Well, I'm just, first of all, taking that feature of the accumulation of the amounts, but as a secondary kind of, if that feature exists, the second thing that you look at is the priority.
Hmm.
And so the priority comes into it as well. So that would have priority over the ordinary shares.
In liquidation, the reason I was asking the question here is if you I would probably answer the technical question wrong if you said to me, is it cumulative pref, liability, or equity? I think because so many of the ones I've seen have also restrictions on other payments that you can make, and so you end up having to treat the dividend entitlement as a liability. And so the reason you're saying cumulative prefs in paragraph 43 is you're talking about the most simplistic form of that, which is just you don't have to make a payment, but if you don't make a payment, the entitlement accumulates so that in liquidation they have a priority for the accumulated entitlement fund. So I think that's important.
All those restrictions are just typically negotiated in the underwriting, and it affects the price, but you don't get common dividends if you're in arrears on preferred.
But may affect the classification depending upon what the other bells and whistles are that may be attached. Okay. It's just the simplest form.
Yeah.
And then the economic compulsion.
Oh, yes.
Compulsion might come into play.
Let's not go there.
In the case that Mary is referring to, where you have consequences of not paying the accumulating rights, they could be so serious that you may have to consider economic compulsion.
And again, I think just going back to why we were doing the analysis as we did, the economic compulsion is this notion of the requirement to otherwise pay something that you wouldn't otherwise have to pay. I think that's looking at the liquidity of the entity, and that goes into assessment A. But when we were talking about the cumulative prefs in that simple case, what we're really just focusing on is the fact that the amount of the accumulates over time, as opposed to which has implications for other assessments that a user might make apart from the economic compulsion.
This is just in its simplest form.
Yep.
Okay. So in paragraph 61-87, we sketch out some possible approaches that we might take to improve the underlying rationale of IS 32 and to make it more consistent. Just that, as a caveat, these are initial ideas, and our preliminary analysis is just simply based on the discussions we've had today, and it is still pretty nebulous. We are expecting to refine them over time, develop them, tweak them, throw more instruments at them as we progress this project, and see how we can develop them further. The three approaches we've identified classify claims as liabilities or equity based on the features required to meet one or the other assessments. So we really try and focus those approaches based on a single set of features to meet a single assessment or a set of assessments. That's not to say that other features are not relevant. If there are other features that are relevant, that just simply means under that given approach, we would need to look at what other methods we would use to provide that information. And I think that's a key point. We are still going to be looking at those other methods, for instance, looking at classifications within liabilities or within equity, or perhaps presentation of performance, where we can provide that additional information under all these approaches. So we're going to go through that as well. A few points before I turn it over. Approach alpha, I've gone Greek, so I've used alpha, beta, gamma. I've ran out of English letters. Approach alpha is probably closest to where we are with the conceptual framework, especially the proposed definition of a liability in the conceptual framework ED. Approach gamma is possibly closest to where we are under IS 32. However, there are some, perhaps some tweaks under that approach that might clarify exactly what the distinction under IS 32 is seeking to achieve. However, approach beta is quite different to both the conceptual framework and where IS 32, and that would probably imply some more changes than the other two approaches. But just giving given those as markers, I just wanted to hear your thoughts about whether we're heading in the right direction. Do you want us to continue developing these different approaches as we go through? Or any other comments you might have?
Amaru?
Yeah. Well, I think it's an excellent paper. And the series of papers in this project are really very good. I think we are reaching the point where identifying distinct instruments in this array of gray area, and maybe spotting in which approach they would be liability or equity, and we might of course identify approaches that they will be liabilities and others they will be equity, and those are the ones that I think we should explore the future features and go into the approach. Since this is a discussion paper, I would like really first to stress what you are reminding us in paragraphs 85 and 87. So actually this is a relatively successful standard in terms of passage of time. We are talking about really the outliers, the instruments that have so many features that are so gray that is difficult and judgment. So in that sense, this is my general feeling. I think we should go to explore approach, since it's a discussion paper. Experience in some jurisdictions, particularly the one I'm aware of in Brazil, I think regulators are influencing quite a lot. And my sense is that they tend to be adopting approach alpha. They tend to. But of course, they will have the opportunity to express if I'm correct or not and why they're doing that. I think the way there are some discussions that they are reading IS-32 not as it should be applied in practice, or is applied in practice in other jurisdictions. So I like the way you framed it. I have an initial tendency to believe that approach gamma should be the approach that at the end of the day we would pursue in developing standard. But as a discussion paper, again, I think we are in the right direction.
Sue?
I just wanted to confirm my understanding of approach gamma, because I think I like it the best, but I want to confirm I understand it properly. So the way I read approach gamma was that it would result in liability classification either if you had an obligation to deliver economic resources prior to liquidation, sort of irrespective of the amount, or an obligation to deliver a fixed amount at liquidation, again, of economic resources. What I didn't understand was what the treatment would be of, say, a five-year instrument where at year five you convert into a variable number of shares.
Yeah. So I think it is based on, okay, the one leg of that is the requirement to transfer resources prior to liquidation, but the other one is based on the amount that you would be required to transfer if you were to settle that, independent of when that settlement occurs, whether that's at liquidation or before. I think that was the intention of Gamma. So it would capture, for instance, the variable share settled instruments, and it would also capture other instruments that, even if they are only going to be settled, required to be settled at liquidation, if they specify an amount of fixed return, for instance, then that would be captured as well.
Is it capturing the words? Because all of the words talk about delivering economic resources, and own shares aren't economic resources, right?
Yeah, that's right, but I think
the amount that is independent of the entity is
I think I need to
tweak
that a bit.
The amount of
economic
resources required to be transferred is independent of.
Yeah.
We make the distinction between economic
be
resources.
Yeah.
We need to lose an economic resource, I think, in the 81B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perhaps that.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think so. Yes. Yeah.
You think so, or you know so?
I know so. That is what we mean. What we mean, yeah.
But that's not at liquidation, yeah. So even if it was a 5-year.
Yeah. So for that 5-year period.
So it's quite similar to 32. Yeah.
Yes. So for that 5-year, it would actually go beyond, I think, where 32 is, because at the moment 32 only requires that classification if you're settling with equity instruments. So under this approach, the intention was to actually go a bit beyond that. If we think that that fixed amount is, or that specified amount is a determining factor of whether something should be a liability or equity, would capture that. Regardless of whether it's settled with shares, whether it's settled with resources, it's that fixed amount that's important under that portion of it.
So the difference with 32 is 32 focuses on an obligation to pay cash.
Yeah, or to settle with equity instruments.
With instruments.
Yeah.
Martin?
These have to be tested.
Yeah.
I think so I agree with you, but I don't understand why you think that's different to 32.
Because under 32 today, if accumulated preference shares would not be classified as a liability.
Okay.
But I think under approach gamma, they would be. Because they specify a return.
It's a fixed amount at liquidation. So whereas today at liquidation sort of ignored in 32, you're now taking
exactly,
an into account.
Yeah.
Okay, I understand. Yeah.
That's what I meant.
I agree with that, I think.
Martin?
Yeah, and your question is, okay, which of that should be developed further? And the question is, do we have to develop further all three, or I think that is your question. And I found it interesting on your paragraph 85, it's a kind of health warning that maybe we don't do nothing, because it's a better approach. Is that my right reading of paragraph 85? And but really my question is, when I have read all the approaches, maybe I have not understand anything in detail, but my understanding was there is no alternative of this approach that would not lead to changes. Currently what is classified equity and liabilities, and I have said it several times, I find it very, very difficult if we come to conclusions which change currently, but people have structured kind of instruments and then they have to change equity and liability classification. I think that will be a nightmare, but it's my personal view. But also this kind of approaches, if we want to solve maybe then, because we have discussed in the past, in the past already, where people have problems like the German issue with
the partnerships.
That partnerships which I don't have then based on a definition, not equity at all. I think even of these approaches, if you want to solve this kind of issues, we need exemptions. I have not found really a kind of solution which solved all our problems. And therefore, I really found it 85 maybe interesting. I think we should develop maybe, and I think most maybe gamma is maybe for me the best approach. But then we should, in due course, really think, okay, what kind of problems we will have if we follow this approach and what kind of changes. Because maybe we come to the conclusion, which is in 85, we leave 32 as it is and then maybe deal with the problems which we are facing and have exceptional rules, which may be not absolutely in line with the concept, but is a solution of what people are saying, okay, we have to do.
Just a comment on that. I think those are fair points. I think even, I don't think we can just go out, for instance, with one approach, because of those inconsistencies that we've identified under 32, because of the inconsistency with concepts, etc. I think people, if we go out with a single approach for the reasons that you stated, we're always going to get attacked. So I think we're going to need to have the alternatives just for the sake of contrast and to serve as foils, so that people understand that
why we are inconsistent.
There's no solution there's no silver bullet, and so there's compromises and trade-offs, and we need to draw those out.
Yeah.
And one way is to show them, okay, so for instance, you don't like this approach because it has an exception here, but if we to get rid of that exception, that would mean that we go somewhere completely different.
Okay.
And I think drawing that out would be quite important just to set our case why we'll be going down one
I agree, but my point is, if he develops these alternatives, these approaches, maybe alternative condition is leave IAS 32 and then develop some kind of exceptional rules for the NCI puts and what we have not, where we have problems currently with. I think that would be all the alternative. If we develop a discussion paper, I think we should discuss.
But I think
that approach will, based on my current understanding, at least would make sure that we don't change existing classification of equity and liability, and which I think is important.
Can I respond just quickly on that? I think Martin raises a good point, because I think we got a pretty clear message from ASAF and others. They don't want us to start with a clean sheet of paper. But if what you're thinking of doing is making sure we understand these different approaches so we've got a good foundation for our analysis, what the discussion paper could perhaps do would be to say, okay, so we'll sort of say we stick with gamma, if that's our conclusion. Then we'll look at how that links to problems we've got in 32 and what the consequence of that might be, because I think we really do need to try and target where we have problems and have a, what do we call it? Our analysis based on fixing something that's broken as opposed to upsetting everybody in the whole world. And so being targeted, but you're, so are you thinking about it that way? It's not like we're saying, let's have this brand new idea of equity. We could draw it back to being problem solving.
I think the way I've been thinking about it with Manuel is that, also I think in trying to encapsulate what both of you are saying, is that we have challenges, and we have heard consistently 32 works, has worked, especially during the crisis, so don't try and fix everything when there isn't a problem. What we're planning to do, one very important thing has already come up, Amara also said, we need to test it, like you were saying, Sue, with specific instruments, how it goes. And I think what the other approaches do, not as a primary focus, is also contrast what are the challenges if you go other way, and strengthens our case why we are exploring a particular approach. Hans said something, is that, exactly, why if we try and solve certain maybe theoretical inconsistency where there are no problems, we open up another Pandora's box which we shouldn't be opening up. That's how we are thinking about, and that's a focus. But yes, it also helps us so that we don't have to go and develop extensively other approaches and focus more in detail on particular one which we think we has got the most potential of success.
Because I think the other thing is, you know, some of the problems we have at the moment are due to these inconsistencies and the incompleteness of the requirements. And so before we start filling in the gaps, we need to know where we want to head to.
How far do you intend to get in terms of saying, well, probably approach gamma is the most appropriate, and with that we can solve a couple of issues in IAS 32, and this is how we intend to do it. Is that what you want to do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it will not remain a theoretical exercise, it will lead to concrete proposals.
Thank you. Maybe I got some the answer from just what you just described. But before making, I prefer, you know, alphabet, gamma is okay. But before making the such decision, how about delta? If we add more features in this approach, we can be more conservative. More financial instruments can be classified as liabilities. So if we just stay at the current standard ISO 32, it's okay to fix some small problems. If that's our approach, then I prefer the gamma. But in the beginning, we had some kind of problems in the previous project, the FICE, you know. This approach is quite similar. The gamma is quite, those three approaches are quite similar. But we had a lot of criticism on that approach on the project. So it seems to me, maybe if we are we are developing, suggesting quite similar to previous project, we might expect some kind of similar criticism. So I'm saying, this is okay, but if we are going to change a kind of a position to more conservative model, then we might add some more features here, and you can develop another approach, for example, delta. So, for example, we can add another feature of the maybe type of a settlement, or some priority. You identify other features, the relevant features, but most of those features we are going to deal with is a kind of subclasses,
yeah,
or some kind of disclosures. The other mediums, media we can sort of deal with, but as Kumar said, if you do not open this Pandora's box, then it's okay. But I'm not you know, expecting we can succeed. You know, a kind of some basic, you know, the improvement of this current classification of data and equity. So that's just, I'm wondering whether
we should open the Pandora's box.
I'm not sure. Because that's why I'm asking you, about your opinion.
We've underpinned, so first of all, what we did was we looked at the existing requirements to pull out those features. We looked at why those features are relevant and where, and sort of we're looking back again at IS32, at which features IS32 is using in the detailed requirements and which features are not, and to see what the inconsistencies and consistencies are, etc. We need to at some stage decide on which features we want to apply and to what extent we need to apply them consistently across the model. I mean, at the moment the problem is that we have some features that are applied in some instances and others in other instances, and I think it would help to clarify which of those features we want to apply consistently and which of those other features we're going to address in other ways. Sorry, did that answer your question, Chong?
Okay.
On the previous, when you're talking about the previous approaches, are you talking about 2008 or the narrow equity approach?
Yes.
Okay.
I agree with that. This, but basically, if you stop here at the approach gamma, then you expect that we can succeed in solving many issues, inconsistencies, in current standards.
Well, if we clarify what the distinction should be, I mean, irrespective of which way you go, as long as we clarify what distinction you want, we can deal with consistency, clarity, and those gaps in the requirements. But we need to first identify what it is you want to base the distinction on. Because at the moment, because that we've got different features applied differently, it's difficult to say how we're going to clarify the requirements, because we have those inconsistencies and the exceptions. So as I said before, that's why the first step is just to confirm what that foundation is before we move forward. And we've got three approaches for doing that. And I think we're not asking for preliminary views at this stage, but it sounds to me like there is a direction that the board perhaps wants to go down. But we can develop the consistency and clarity of those requirements for the approaches together. And sorry, just the point, I don't think approach gamma is similar to the basic ownership approach, which was put out before. I think you would capture a lot more equity instruments under approach gamma than you would under the basic ownership approach. That's not to say that we're not going to try and identify subclasses within equity. We might still do that, but it's not going to drive. I don't think we're going to have one class of equity and then everything else is a liability under gamma anyway.
Rego?
Several points. First, I agree with what the board members said, you know, we not start with a plan sheet, you know. And secondly, we should target the issues we face cumulatively. And I personally prefer we not make decision before we publish DP. It will be quite dangerous because it is so sensitive area. And Martin expressed his concern, he called it a nightmare, you know. Inevitable, some words will, any changes will create significant impact from this point of view or another. But on the other hand, Martin, I have slight different interpretation about paragraphs you mentioned. You know, from your eye, you know, paragraph 85, you know, give you some kind of comfort. Will not, you know, try to, you know, have revolutionary changes, you know, or not much changes. But I think 85 is quite neutral, you know. You limit unnecessary changes can be interpreted big changes or not, because unnecessary it's hard to define, you know. So I have slight different interpretation about 85. I fully agree with the paragraph 85, you know, it is right. But one thing, Martin, I slightly different from you. Maybe I misunderstand what you say. I think you say you no change, but the future approach will still be many exceptions. I will foresee in the future we might still need some exceptions. But the whole purpose of this effort is try to improve the principles and reduce possible exception. This is what I feel. Manu, I'm right or not?
Well, we need to try and get to exactly where the distinction should be. But based on that, there could be reasons to have exceptions. For instance, one of the problems is the incomplete recognition and measurement of assets and liabilities, and ultimately we're going to have to pick one claim that's going to be measured as the residual.
I had a question. I don't think that's necessarily so. That's paragraph 70 and paragraph 28B. 28, you mentioned that. I think you can have a situation where there's no equity.
Okay, granted, but we still need to identify which claim we're going to measure as the residual.
Could be zero.
Could be zero.
The residual could be zero.
That's paragraph 70.
Still a residual.
Yeah.
I'm agreeing with you.
Sorry.
It can be negative.
No, what? Well,
I mean, the partnership thing, we dealt with that in UK GAAP. These are more like legal partnerships or accounting partnerships or whatever. Where I think there genuinely is no equity.
We'll deal with it before this project is over in the insurance project with mutual insurance companies.
But just to clarify, Ian, you wouldn't require the partnership interest to be measured directly.
So you could have an entity fully funded by liabilities.
Yeah.
That's
my point. He's not disagreeing with that.
That's granted, but it's the measurement that I was just talking about.
That you don't go directly and measure the equity. It's the leftover. Could be zero.
Yeah.
It could be zero, but yes. But that is a measure.
Stephen?
It has to happen because of the equation.
I'm also on paragraph 85. So you say that IS 32 has not presented challenges in majority of cases. I presume you mean from a preparer perspective hasn't presented challenges. Because from an investor perspective, I think there's a lot of confusion in this area. My question is, what are we going to do in terms of investor outreach and thinking about it more from an investor perspective?
Well, I think we are trying to think of it more from the investor perspective in terms of what information is relevant to them and how we can present the information to assist in the assessments that, for instance, we would like to know whether the assessments that we've identified are assessments that they would be interested in, what would be more relevant, what would be less relevant to their needs. At the moment, I think many of the issues with 32 have to deal with, for instance, diversity in practice for some types of instruments. So I think there are problems on the preparer side as well. And they sort of are transmitted to the users as well, because as soon as you get diversity in practice, then it causes confusion about the classification decisions of particular types of instruments. So I'm not saying that there are no problems with ISO 2, but I think the basic constructs are already there in terms of these features that we've identified, the need to transfer cash and assets prior to liquidation, and there are also instances where, for instance, the amount is important, we want to capture those, but it's how those interact, and when instruments have those different combinations of features, how IS-32 applies to them. I think that's where we get the difficulties. Now, in most situations, of course, if you have bonds and you have ordinary shares, there are no problems. So I think in that sense, there's not going to be a radical change, of course. So we're looking only at the margins.
One of the problems investors face, for example, is trying to understand the performance of entities that issue equity settled options versus cash settled employee stock options. My understanding is that alpha and gamma would preserve a different treatment of those. Beta would make them consistent. Is that right?
I haven't thought too deeply, but I think that would be the case, because alpha and gamma would look at the settlement and therefore would classify them differently to beta. Beta is almost settlement indifferent. Beta just focuses on what value you've promised.
We're coming back.
But we're not looking at IFRS 2 issues under this project, but we'll have to think about implications.
But presumably we are going to consider IFRS 2 implications along the way at some point.
I mean, there is
inevitable, because several years ago when we, you know, discussed with FSB, finally we stuck in, I think, two scenarios. One is this. Maybe we need, I think, convertible bonds? Oh, no.
Those are the right issues.
Prefer shares.
We're going to do it.
That's the next one.
Let's go through the process. We'll throw instruments at the approaches. We'll see.
You're going to come back with derivatives on shares, yeah? So Stephen's going to get his chance.
You're going to get your derivatives, Steve.
Why we didn't bring derivatives?
Way, but you can try.
Yeah. Mary. Just quickly, didn't bring derivatives for very this reason, Steve. We'll bring it separately, you'll get your chance of the joys.
But to respond in a different way, for instance, if you had ordinary shares and you had a different class that was puttable, under the approaches, they would be classified differently. Yes. Maybe you just take that simple example.
Partly the most recent part of this discussion, and also the comments about, I can't remember if it's 85 or 87. The one thing, it's going to be important now as we go forward, before we get to the DP, in the DP, after the DP, that we're very focused in our messaging about what we are trying to accomplish, because DP does usually signal to people clean sheet of paper, thinking broadly, wide range of alternatives. I agree that we should be doing a DP. No complaints that we are, and if we weren't, I'd be kicking and screaming. But I think we do have to make maybe more more attention to the messaging around why we're doing the DP. I think the subject to Steve's point about do users really sign on to the 32 has worked pretty well. I think I would say 32 has worked, as you said, reasonably well, but it's difficult interpreting it, because when you get new instruments or combinations of features, the inconsistencies with the conceptual framework make it difficult to extend in an interpretive fashion. And there are inconsistencies with things like IFRS 2 if we're going to change conceptual framework, means we need to look very carefully, and that's why we're going back and doing a DP. But it's not to clean sheet of paper, think about how we up it and all of the classification decisions. Second thing, and this may go a little way to what Steve was signaling, this is still in the messaging bit, we also have heard when we raise this topic that I've heard a message from users of financial statements, they're interested in getting more information about dilution and sharing in performance, and I think that gets wrapped into this discussion. That's an additional add that we should think about how we respond to, but I think it, the discussion works with this, but I think we should acknowledge that that's, to me, additional to the basic classification and how we respond to that call for additional information, insights into dilution and the interaction of dilution with classification. It's always been bundled up in this. Now, in terms of the paper and what you presented and which approach, you know, the painstaking working through the approaches has challenged me in a good way. And I think when I go through the three approaches here, even if all that messaging, what's the purpose of this project, might drive me towards the gamma approach, it's made me think harder because I think I focus more on the beta approach now. So I think it's given me a principle that underpins why we want to classify, why we classify today, why we want to classify variable number of shares as a liability claim rather than as an equity claim. And the other thing it's made me aware is there's a lot that we just reflexively classify. And if you say, why am I classifying fixed, you know, debt, a million currency units of debt as liability, because it's a claim on cash. But it also is a fixed claim, and that's the beta feature. And if we go gamma, the other thing it's made me realize is that what we all tend to think, oh, because you have a claim, it's got to be a liability, a claim on the cash, the fixed debt. It may be actually because it's not a proportionate amount, and we are not consistent across IFRS or virtually any other gap in terms of the first thing the balance sheet has to do is give you all claims, because executory contracts are not on the balance sheet. So it's not a complete picture of all the cash commitments of an entity. And so where this thinking is getting me is if we go gamma, the difference between beta and gamma, where beta is just the fixed amount, is maybe where I would get to a subclass, because the inconsistency, the anomalies that I've struggled with is something like shares putable at fair value, minority interest putable at fair value. Is they're in there because they're a claim, not because they're disproportionate. Right now we say all claims through changes in liability claims through P&L. If we were to capture our concepts as gamma, then if it's only a claim before liquidation, the timing that gets you there, does that make it a separate subclass where maybe changes don't go in P&L? And that I'm starting to see how we might do the subclasses within gamma. So it isn't a radical change, but in terms of are putable shares an exception? They might not, they aren't an exception. Well, I think the concern about putable shares being classified as liabilities, what a lot of the anomaly is that the changes in value go through P&L.
Well, I think one of the interesting things that I found just preparing the paper is, okay, if we care about the cash call on the entity. For putable shares, we haven't, I mean, they might be putable on demand and that cash call might come quite soon, but it was interesting to see that the features that we used to make that exception aligned with some of the thinking about whether the amount is proportional or whether it's for instance, if it was a fixed amount, we wouldn't want them to be classified as equity. And it was interesting to see that we've used the features that might be relevant for something else, perhaps performance, perhaps how it responds to changes in the assets, to make that exception.
So when I get to saying, okay, I think we should put out all three, talk about all three, and this is of course all subject to, kind of throwing some individual instruments at the different analyses. I think one of the things that's really helpful about setting out alpha, then beta, and then gamma, where gamma is a combination of if you trip either alpha or beta, it makes you think about how you might get to subclasses within gamma and a conceptual basis for thinking about what, if any, variations do we do in terms of the accounting and presentation within there, because it's led me to elevate as the primary classification criterion the beta analysis with alpha kind of being secondary. And I wouldn't have thought that going into this.
I think Manuel is a very good analysis, and it shows that as our predecessors, it's not an easy problem, and there is no clear-cut answer that will address all problems. I think at the end of the day, I think we need to discuss each of the three approaches, but I would like, maybe for us and for our constituents as well, to see in a summarized form, maybe a table showing for each of the three analysis, alpha, beta, gamma, three criteria. One, how that approach would help solve some of the current practice issues. Second column, if that approach was applied in a strict way, how much it would create of changes to areas where people today do not seem to have big problems. And maybe third column, and that will mean that we may have to make exceptions, because people will resist unnecessary changes or changes to areas where they don't see a problem.
Yeah.
So any approach which is applied in a strict way requires some exceptions. So, and maybe a third column, how consistent the approach is to the exposure draft of the conceptual framework. And I think those are the three criteria that we and our respondents will have to consider in saying that's the right thing to do. But it's a combination of those three things. And as Marie said, we need to be very careful about communication. I agree with that. We don't need to scare the whole world today with the idea that we're going to change everything and start with a clean sheet of papers and move all sorts of things from liabilities to equity and from equity to liabilities, because at this stage, it's probably not what people want.
Could I just come in on with the last thing you said about your third column being whether it's consistent or not with the conceptual framework, ED? Because that's the part I don't agree with, and I think it's inconsistent with some of the ground rules where we said we weren't going to rush ahead and put into the conceptual framework, ED, the changes that we thought were necessary to deal with classification. We're trying to develop the changes here. So I could see a third column that said, what if any changes would be necessary to what was proposed? But we said we weren't going to be constrained in our debating, et cetera, by what's in there.
Approach alpha is consistent, is intended to be consistent with the conceptual framework, so we can see any inconsistencies with the other, so we can do that comparison.
I'm not saying
it doesn't lead to a no-no.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm not saying that we should prohibit or forbid ourselves from moving away from the concept, but we need to be a little bit consistent when we communicate to the world. We have a proposal on the table, which is exposure draft of the conceptual framework. I think when we issue anything at the same time, we must show how consistent or not consistent our thinking, the possible thinking is or is not consistent with that thing.
Or it should show what changes are needed.
That's
better.
Thank you.
The conceptual framework is not perfect.
Yeah. I don't like gamma approach at all, because it's an artificial combination of two different principles.
Yeah.
So So either alpha or beta has a single principle. And I had a conversation with the investors who said, we don't expect accounting standard to identify equity. We can do it based on the information. And the purpose of analysis is different. So if you want to analyze the liquidity, then you prefer settlement approach, which is the alpha approach. And if you want to see the value of the entity and the performance of the entity, you would prefer the beta approach. So then it should be the discretion of the investor rather than accounting standards. So therefore, he said, you don't have to go to binary approach, just a single credit side is fine, no equity. But it's extreme. It's nonsense. So then we decided we go to binary approach. So therefore we need to define the equity, even though it's a residual. So then that's fine. In that case, I rather prefer the beta approach. Beta approach would provide better idea of what the performance is, and it would provide a consistent approach. So I think it's my preference is a better approach, but yeah. I really like the suggestion made by Philippe. We provide table and pros and cons, yeah. And then yeah. We put the lots of financial instruments,
yeah.
And what is the impact,
yeah.
And outcome? That is very important.
As we go through this, as we develop the approaches, we'll just start populating those tables as we go, just to each time we add, go through more instruments, we can just keep populating those tables just to show the differences between them. Again, we're not looking for sort of preliminary views at this point in time, just looking at whether these you're happy developing these approaches.
Yeah.
Because you know it's always the case that people prefer one approach until they see the consequences and then they change their mind. So let's just go through the process. Yeah.
So
I want to encourage the staff to protect us from ourselves a little bit with this idea of keeping ahead, because my takeaway from the old FICE project was it fell apart largely because we started looking at individual instruments and how they're going to end up getting classified, and then individual board members panicked when the instrument they cared about wasn't getting the classification they wanted, and then you kept getting sent back to solve for that to get a different result, and we ended up with no principle. So I actually like the fact that you're trying to get us to have a principle, and before you make it, letting us look at instruments too much and keeping the instruments very simple, because I think it's a better discipline, frankly, for us to develop and get a firm grounding on what we're shooting for, and only then to start looking at instruments. And so then we can remind one another why we got the outcomes for the instruments, because of the anchor we had. And I'm not sure our anchor's solid enough yet.
Yep.
To let us loose on worrying about individual instruments. So that's more of a caution. On the point that Philippe raised about the comparison with the conceptual framework, I think that is a good discipline, because some of the things, like the comments that Mary was making about things like the NCI puts, that requires a very big change in concept of what a liability is if we are to line up the framework, because we're now saying that not all obligations to deliver economic resources would necessarily be liabilities. That's a huge change.
Yep, yep.
So while people might like the idea when they think about NCI puts, I think it's good for us to be aware of what the consequence of that is if you follow it through to its logical extreme.
Absolutely, liabilities. Except that it has a strange effect on P&L.
I think Mary's point was...
Mary's secondary point was maybe it shows us that even if it's got an equity classification, we should be showing movements somewhere.
Or even if it's liability, it's about the...
Which is fine. But I just worry about people taking things, not people around this table.
Yes,
but
if you pay in shares...
I would say now if it's classified within equity, it's a subclass, but if it's classified
as
within
liability...
It's maybe a separate class of liability.
Also, I think that Steve's point about share-based payments was a good one, because I think it would be unfortunate to do all of this work in the context of 32 thinking about the conceptual framework and ignoring the fact that we've got another standard that often has very similar instruments, just in a different context, where at the moment we have completely different outcomes.
Yeah. No, I think that's a... I'm just wary of scope creep at this point, and while we want to...
On it, I think.
Yeah.
Well, particularly if soon I think we're going to talk about doing a research paper on IFRS 2 potentially, we need to think about how all of this interrelates.
Manuel, you've raised a lot of good points in this paper, which I think have been commented on. I'm not going to repeat many of them. I wanted to pick up on a few things that Sue and Philippe mentioned. I think it would be very helpful to illustrate consequences in broad terms, not necessarily with a lot of different instruments, but at least the ones you've identified here, and create a matrix so that people can look at a dashboard very quickly and anchor themselves, because you're introducing new nomenclature. Every time, you know, we talk about this, we got to go back and revisit what was assessment A, what was assessment B, why, et cetera. One of the things, though, that I think we need to deal with, though, is the concept that I'll use the acronym that's familiar for me from Excel, WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get, okay? When you look at a balance sheet, there's a certain expectation that if something's classified as a liability and something's classified as an equity, it's got certain characteristics about timing of when something is due and resources, whether or not you've got enough resources to make that payment. And those are things that you would expect would be applied consistently for a balance sheet. Amount and timing. There's no question that credit analysts are looking at those issues. But what this model that we're proposing to do is essentially doing is looking at the world in a kind of a static and deterministic way, right? And not from the perspective of, let's say, the way things are measured in the marketplace. So their view of how something is going to perform for, you know, an investment versus the way it's reported on a balance sheet are really two different worlds. And I think one of the things I think would help in getting feedback in this area is to talk about the drawbacks of this framework that you're developing here. Yep. It's a very deterministic framework, and it's not looking at the way things are measured and valued and invested and traded in the real world. And I think that has to come through. Balance sheets have limitations, and I think that's essentially what you have to stress, is the limitation on the amount of information that you're getting here. And I think where people really, really start to cringe is when you get down into this paragraph that talks about 9, about put options, contingencies, redeemable preference shares. If those things are classified as equity instruments, then what you see is not what you get, because they might be, you know, come liabilities. And if they do, then, I didn't understand that, you know. So classification here, driven by a single factor, it's got a lot of limitations. And, you know, to Martin's point, you know, we're going to upset a lot of people if we start changing the way things are done here. In my mind, presentation, just as it's a panacea, it's a solution in the P&L, presentation is potentially a solution for the balance sheet as well. To you know, deal with the very divergent views on this subject. So, and that's where I think you can bring in the concepts of measurement, not hang it on just a single factor, you know, amount, timing, amount and time, those kinds of things. So I would like to see that explored in the discussion paper as well.
Well, I think Manuel has enough to go on.
Yep, okay. So.
And us.
In a few years.
So the general, what I heard is basically people are happy with exploring these approaches, developing them further, just really focused, I think, on the problems that we have and how these might affect those problems, and perhaps going forward we can start bringing you in a more summarized format, perhaps in a table or a matrix, as we go through all these different factors, and so you can see it, how it develops as we go.
Just quickly, for the next paper, which I know next month will be the favorite one, is when we start bringing derivatives back to the table. And this is where I would like to make a plea, which Sue has said, that protect us from ourselves. We will bring in a set of instruments, and that's what we would like to apply the principles to see how it goes. Because in the world of derivatives, I just need to structure around to bring any kind of feature in. It's absolutely ad infinitum what I can structure. So that's what we will try and do with a set of instruments, start applying them, and bring that back. And that's when the fun will start. So I would put that plea down, and then hopefully see what happens in October.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Take a break at 11:15.